Lincoln, my son at the time, who I think was, he was 11 or 12, he got hit by a car and he got thrown into a ditch. Like, he should be dead. He was in the hospital for a long time. He was in a coma. I thought he would be afraid of life for the rest of his life. It was the opposite for him. Huh. It wasn't that he got hit by a car. It was that he beat the car. Cool. He wasn't just a survivor. He was Superman.
Welcome to the Healing Herb Podcast. This is your grief expert and friend, Ashley Lemieux. Welcome back, you guys, to this week of the Healing Herb Podcast.
I'm just joking.
Oh, Richie's jumping in. Welcome, Richie.
No, I'm just crazy like that, you know?
You guys are going to laugh because I'm in Hawaii right now, and I thought it would be a good idea because I didn't want to miss a week with you to bring half of my podcast equipment to Hawaii with me. And while I was here, I was like, I have to have this guy on the show, which I will tell you is a big deal because I don't have guys on the show.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, because it's Healing Her.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Honored.
So
also, it looks like I think you grew like 2 feet while
you've been
in Hawaii. Let me look.
you need to sit up, Richie. Okay.
I can't do it.
So I'm on a couch right now.
All right.
And the North Shore.
That's right.
Of Oahu, mm-hmm. with none other than Richie Norton. And I'm so excited about this because we have known Richie and his wife Natalie now for a really long time. It has to be close to a decade.
Yeah.
If not a decade.
Yep.
And both of us have gone through some hard things during this time, which we'll talk a little bit about today. But Richie is a best-selling author of 2 books now, and he's an entrepreneur, and he does some really, really cool things. Mike and I actually have been working with him for a while now, and we're just going to talk about a lot of things today, but Richie, thanks for letting me be in your house doing this.
I'm super excited to be here. No, honestly, super honored. You know, we were hanging out, all of us, you know, our families and friends on the mm-hmm. beach the other day. Your baby's so big now.
I know.
It's crazy.
It's so sweet. And she let you pick her up.
Oh, man.
so you guys are friends now.
She's my best friend now.
Well, I remember the last time we were in Hawaii, we were like, we don't know what the next step is in our lives because we don't have kids and we've been trying and there's been loss and there's been all these things. And so it's been fun to come back this trip with her and just having a whole different experience here because when we came, I think that was like 3 years ago now, it was kind of this pause time in our life. And so North Shore just became this special little moment for Mike and I just to take a breath and figure out what are we going to do next in our life. And that's when I decided I was going to go back to school and started this whole new
chapter. Crazy. So much.
So much. And now I feel like 20 lifetimes has happened
flies.
Since then.
Yeah. You and Mike are such inspirations to Natalie and I. And to so many, you know, like, we just love you guys so much. So honestly, I don't know why you're interviewing me. I should be interviewing you right now, but this is a good time and we're going to have a lot of fun.
We feel the same way about you and Natalie. I feel like there's been some really difficult moments in our life where Natalie has been one of the first people that I've texted or called, and she's been there with me to walk me through, like, in the crisis moment, not after telling her something has happened, because we know that you guys are people who get it. Unfortunately, I hate that that's something that we have in common, but I think that because we do, Mike and I just appreciate your guys' friendship so much. So I know that a lot of my audience is going to be hearing your story for the first time. And so I kind of want to go back before we can go forward, because something for everyone, you guys who are listening, something that Richie and Natalie are so great at is figuring out, what do we do now? Like, what do we do now that life is so different than we thought it was going to be? And that has happened not just one time to you guys, but over and over again. And so to get to that conversation, I want people to understand where Thanks. You are coming from.
Okay. And what's next is like a really good, it's a thought-provoking, you know, question, mm-hmm. right? You know, like what is next after tragedy? You know, it's not even something you want to think about, you know, honestly, sometimes. I like to say that grief is a tunnel, not a cave. And that sometimes people say the wrong things all the time, you know, they're well-meaning, and we all do these kinds of things. But I really learned it's not necessarily about moving on. Like these stories, these experiences, these people, somehow, whether we like it or not, they become a part of us. And it's about, in my opinion, assigning meaning to it. It's not just like, oh God, what is the meaning of this thing? Because sometimes it never comes. Sometimes it's just, I assign meaning to this thing, positive meaning. So like Natalie and I, when we first got married, we had kids right away. And her brother lived on and off with us for about 5 years. His name was Gavin. Gavin, such a fun, loving, awesome guy. One day he didn't wake up. He passed away in his sleep at the age of 21. And when that happened, you know, we had our boys who were super young, who looked up to him, knew him. You know, everyone understands life and death in different ways, but also at different ages, you yes. know, in different ways. We don't always think about that. And when he died, it was a gigantic surprise to us and to everyone, not just the sake of him, you know, leaving, but also what now? Meaning, I always thought one day you grow old, you know, and you live your life. And in America, you retire at 65, and then you get to really live the life you always dreamed of. This is what America has taught us for a mm-hmm. long time. This is the same thing in many places all around the world. But it wasn't that way for Gavin. And it made us rethink about not just what our priorities are, but when we live them. Like I learned, you can't time your values. You have to value your time, right? Mm-hmm. They're two different things, and they create two different people, right? So after he passed away, we had actually had our fourth son, and we named him Gavin after my brother-in-law, Gavin. And he brought so much joy into our lives, such a cool little kid, you know, just a baby, but he got this cough. And babies cough, and took him to the doctors, and they said he's fine. They said, oh, it might be RSV, but he'll be fine. They said, there's nothing we can do, but don't worry, he's gonna be fine. We took it very seriously. Until one day we brought him into the hospital and they said, you guys have to stay here. You need to stay the night. We need to check on this. And we're like, oh, great. Like, please, let's figure this out. And it wasn't for a long period of time that we were in the hospital. I think it was days, maybe even more than a week, until they finally figured out he had something called pertussis, also known as whooping cough. He had his shots, he had all the things, but somehow he got this. And it was just too much on his little body. Now, I don't need to get into all the details, but I'll tell you this. We were sitting there in the hospital, and my sweet wife, Natalie, she's, you know, blogging, and, you know, we're telling the world in like those one tiny moments of time in between, you know, like when we're waiting for something or doing whatever. And we had people praying for us from all around the world. One guy said he stood up all night praying for our baby, you know, in Istanbul. And we're like, wow, that's crazy. And a nurse came in and said, you guys need to stay the night, which is a weird thing to say because we always obviously stayed the night. She was trying to clue us in on the idea that he wasn't going to make it. And I'm on one side of his little hospital bed and my wife's on the other. And we knew that this experience could and would possibly tear us apart, as death does to so many families. And this happened a while ago. We still experience this pain today. That's the crazy thing, right? But they took off all the little wires. They took off all the, I don't know, monitor things, all the tubes that were giving him the fluids that he needed. And what we told ourselves, that his life would bring us closer together, not further apart. And I held him for a moment, handed him to my wife, put my hand on his heart while she rocked him in a rocking chair. and sing them lullabies, and we just waited for those last beats. And we left that hospital empty-handed, which is something you don't think about when someone passes away, is that you once had this person, now you have to leave their physical body there. And Natalie couldn't do it, obviously. And a nurse came in, and she was an angel. She said, "Can I rock your baby?" So this nurse rocks our baby. And I asked Natalie later, I said, like, "How'd you do it?" And she said, like, she felt that she never could and she couldn't. But she also says, if I remember right, she said she felt like there was another Natalie inside her that took her by the hand, you know, like a stronger version of her that kind of walked her out, you know, of the doors of that situation. And someone asked me later, like, "What'd you learn?" It was a mentor of mine. And she asked, "What'd you learn from the experience of your son passing away, your brother-in-law passing away?" And my wife was there too. And Natalie's like, "Ask me in a year, you know, like, what are you talking about?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Did we learn anything? Like, life sucks.
Yeah. Life freaking sucks.
What are we supposed to learn?" But I came with something that I call, because they're both named Gavin, I call it Gavin's Law, which to me means live to start, start to live. Because when you live those ideas that are pressing on your mind, even in the darkest hours, you really will start living. And I'm not saying like it's easy, or I'm not saying that it's magical, I'm not saying that it's overnight, but I am saying that many people are walking around like zombies, while at the same time there are ideas, positive ideas, crazy ideas, quote unquote stupid ideas that actually happen to be smart ideas, and they don't do anything about them. And every time we ignore those ideas, I feel like we die a little bit ourselves inside. So Gavin's Law, live to start, start to live. Let me share a couple more terrible things with you real quick, okay?
First of all, can we pause just for a second? Because
oh my gosh,
I obviously know this and we've talked about it, but still just wanting to honor Gavin and you and Natalie and this experience of your grief. Like, you guys have had to walk through things that no parent should ever have had and go through out of order death with your baby, that it's like your brain, how do you wrap your head and life around that and keep going? And I'm just so proud of you guys. Like, I'm so sorry. And it's so shitty and it makes me so upset for all of you. And also I'm so proud of what you've done and how you've continued on. So I didn't want you to keep going before. I just wanted to acknowledge and honor everything.
I appreciate that. So. And, you know, I tell this story, I tell all the time whenever I get the chance. And sometimes I'm like, well, I shouldn't tell it. People already know, or like, I've just said it so many times. But then I say, no, my mission is to honor them. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell it again.
Yeah.
And if it can help somebody, then that's good. You understand.
I understand.
It's hard. It's not a cool club to be in.
It's the worst, you know what I mean? It's the worst club to be in, but it's also such an honor just to hear about Gavin and to that you guys do share about him. Like, I feel like that would have probably been such a sacred time for you also, because it's your baby, but then you're sharing it, you know, with me now and those listening. And I just feel, I don't know, like, I feel like I want to go back into that room with you both, like those years ago, and just hug everybody. And so now I hope that people get to do that now.
I agree. No, thank you. No, I really do appreciate that. It's hard, you know, to reminisce, but I also think that sometimes in grief we avoid it for certain reasons, and maybe for good reasons. And I think that sometimes we punish ourselves for feeling good when something bad has happened, right? And sometimes we punish ourselves for feeling bad, even though it is deserved, you know, that we can feel bad for a moment. We punish ourselves for feeling comfortable just hanging out and watching Netflix or something, you know, having a down day or down week or a down month. Like, we're constantly punishing ourselves. And I think go through grief, and you don't necessarily have to punish yourself while you're going through it. I didn't know that when we were grieving through the first Gavin, but we learned a little bit with the second Gavin to just go a little bit deeper and feel the grief all the way through. Not that it's going to go away, but somehow through the process, I have my own idea about the whole thing. And this is something I've never shared anywhere before. I feel like character comes from losses, not from wins. And, you know, who knows what the purpose of life is? Who knows what's going on? But I do know that it is through some of the darkest times that we can actually become our best selves.
When was the last time that you felt actual peace and clarity about who you are and where you want to go? If it's been a while, I want you to know that you're not alone. And I can help you. I'm so excited to tell you that the Healing Her membership is officially live, and we are starting now. Take everything that you learn from these podcast episodes and be able to apply it in your day-to-day life through the Healing Her membership. Inside of the membership, you're going to finally have the community that you've been looking for. You'll be able to connect with like-minded women to find accountability to help you move forward in your life. You'll get weekly and monthly coaching from me. You'll have access to tools of peace that you can pull out right from your pocket, that you can access meditations and exclusive podcast interview footage and so much other content so that you always have a resource when you feel stuck. Your peace is worth a dollar a day. And that is as much as it costs inside of the Healing Her membership. I want to make sure that you get in there while our founding member pricing is available. So go to the show notes below or go to ashleylemieux.com/membership and let's get you in there today. I cannot wait to help you get more clarity and more peace than you have probably felt in years. Why? Because you are deserving of it. And even if life doesn't look like you thought it was going to by now, that doesn't mean that there still isn't a bright, beautiful future waiting for you. So let's get you in there, and I cannot wait to see you on the inside. Again, go to ashleylemieux.com/membership to be able to join the Healing Her community today. It happened so fast, but somehow my little girl is about to be at the age where she will start taking vitamins, and I have been totally overwhelmed with knowing what brand and what products to give her. So I was very excited when I found Hiya, because typically children's vitamins are basically a candy in disguise, and so I wanted to find a vitamin that I could trust. That's why Hiya was created, the pediatrician-approved, super-powered, chewable vitamins that don't have the 5 grams of sugar that most children's vitamins are filled with. Hiya is made with zero sugar and zero gummy junk, yet it tastes great and is perfect for picky eaters. Hiya fills the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with a yummy taste that they love. When the package came, even though my little girl hasn't started them yet, but she will in the next few months, she loved the bottle that it came with because it has fun little stickers that you can decorate it with. And it was just like this special personalized experience just for her. That bottle comes with the first order. And I also recommend checking out their new kids probiotic and nighttime essentials. Something that I also love about Hiya is that you get the bottle that's really cool with your first order, and then they send you eco-friendly refills every month. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/healingher. This deal is not available on their regular website, so go to H-I-Y-A-H-E-A-L-T-H HEALTH.com/healinghER and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Well, and as someone who personally knows you, I can say that Mike and I always talk about how cool and amazing the Nortons are. And so I hate that your character has been built through the specific losses that you have had, but we also have seen firsthand how it has. So I can vouch for that, that what you're saying is true.
No, thank you. And also, I know you hear this too, because we start sharing stories, people start telling you their stories. And so you start hearing all the things, you know, and it's like this whole like loop of, oh my gosh, the whole world, you know, like everyone's experiencing something terrible. But I hear weird things that people will say, well, I had this bad experience, but it's not as bad as yours. And I go, don't minimize your experience. You know, like when you stub your toe, it hurts your whole body. You know, like there's no comparing. Pain is pain. It fills the whole soul, unfortunately.
It does. That's also, though, another way that people avoid their grief.
That's true.
If we can compare it to each other and say, well, yours is worse than mine, that's one of the things that prevents us from going in deeper to our grief. And the guilt, you didn't use the word guilt just now when you're talking about it, but feeling bad, making ourselves feel bad when we feel bad, or making ourselves feel bad when we feel good, and making yourself feel bad if you just want to watch Netflix or have a calm day, and then you feel bad because life is feeling maybe happy for one moment, but how could you let that happen when you've gone through the loss? There's this part of grief that comes, and it's guilt. And
interesting,
guilt is our brain's way of trying to have us keep feeling safe in a world that is unpredictable. But guilt tells us, well, I feel bad about this thing because part of it had to have been my fault. If I would have done this differently, then it could have been prevented. Or if I would have just done this thing, then maybe the outcome would be different. And our brain is like trying to find the solution and tells us that we should have been the solution, because it then makes it feel safer for us to keep existing in a world that's unpredictable. It's like how we can tell ourselves, okay, it was my fault, so that this isn't gonna happen again.
That's so true.
But then you're, you go in the cycle. No,
the work you're doing is so important, is because there's an analogy, and I'm not sure exactly who said it, so I apologize for not crediting the right person, but in short, it's basically like, there's a person that has a thorn in their foot and they walk around limping and they tell themselves, I have a limp. When in reality, they just need to remove the thorn. Sometimes grief, if we don't recognize, like what you're talking about is recognition of the feeling. It's not about punishing yourself for it. It's important to be self-aware, accept it, and then, I mean, what happens next? I don't know, but at least it's better than punishing yourself, right? Mm-hmm. How could you live your life with a thorn in your foot, thinking you have a limp, when someone like a good person like you comes along and goes, hold on, wait, there's actually a thorn in your foot. Do you recognize that? Let's do the work to take it out. Because what happens is people start illogically thinking they are the person made by the tragedy in a negative way. And their behaviors start to become the avoidant behaviors. And then they say, I am that person. And you say, actually, that is your inauthentic self. Even though you're telling yourself you're being vulnerable and authentic, your authentic, vulnerable, real self is the one that recognizes there is a thorn and is strong and powerful and takes it out.
Yes. And sometimes I think we keep the thorn in because there's a lot of shame.
Oh, totally.
And so it's easier sometimes to say you just have a whole limp than to also then add on the layer of shame sometimes that can come. I love that analogy so much. That's so good. I actually haven't heard that before.
I don't know. Maybe I made it up. But no, there's something like
that.
Someone said something like that somewhere. I do not think I made it up, but I definitely added to whatever that was. So
that's a good one. Okay.
But we do it a lot in all kinds of things. Let me just give you one more example, because I think it's important for someone to hear this.
Like, I was going
to
say, let's hear the next terrible example.
I'll tell you one more terrible example. Cut you off. Okay. One more idea. So I have met a person who was so good at singing. and they are a great singer and they identify as a great singer now. But when they were young, a teacher told them that they were out of tune, they couldn't sing, and they lived for decades thinking they couldn't sing, and so they never sung. This is too real for too many of us that we believe either our own thoughts or what someone else has told us, when in reality, it's just simply not true. Anyways, I'm saying this not to make anyone, like you said, feel ashamed or guilty, but to be just aware that recognize what it is. And then let's figure it out.
Yes. The acknowledge is the first step of the grieving. It's like one of the main needs of people who are grieving. You have to acknowledge it. Yeah. And most people spend their whole lives avoiding instead. Yes.
So after the second tragedy here, you know, our fourth son, Gavin, and the second Gavin that passed away, they're both buried here in, you know, La Iao, you know, just down the way. And we visit them, you know, often. But I pulled out a sheet of paper and I folded it in half one way and folded it in half the other way. And I had four quadrants and I wrote down all my different like dreams and goals and just ideas. I narrowed it down to like four things that I wanted to do. And I came up with this idea that I eventually wanted to get like an executive MBA from this one program and do all these. I started to dream a little bit. Natalie was still in a phase where she didn't want to dream or think of goals at all because she didn't want to be let down.
Yes.
Right?
And that fear is so real.
Which I think is important, like, even in a partnership, you know, in your marriage, in my opinion, it's not about a race of who's ahead or who's getting stronger or who's working on something. It's more about if Natalie knows what's important to me and she supports me, and I know what's important to her and I support her, even though they may be different things, maybe entirely different things, we're on the same page.
Yeah.
That's very different. You know what I mean? And I just hope people, especially going through grief, think about that. Anyways, so I came with this idea that I wanted to do some of these things. And we actually sold our home in Hawaii and moved to Arizona. I did the executive MBA program at Thunderbird. It was number one international business school in the world at the time. And it was awful. Like, why would we leave Hawaii for Arizona? You know, I go, I know you live there. Arizona's great. But I'm like,
we love Arizona, but I know that you have feelings about it.
Arizona,
you're allowed to.
Arizona's just one big beach. You know what I'm saying? There's lots of sand. And just forgot the water for some reason, you know? Like, but while we did that, I wrote the book, The Power of Starting Something Stupid. Amazing.
It's so good.
Then I got into like venture capital stuff. I'm just giving a little bit of context. Then one day my wife meets a wonderful mother, single mother with three children, a seven-year-old girl and one-year-old twins. And she meets her at church and she says, hey, can you watch my kids? We never seen this person before. She like never knew her. Anyways, she must have been visiting or something. We're like, my wife's like, of course I'll watch your kids. Like, what do you mean? Like, what's going on? And she said, well, I got a new job and I have to do it at night and no one will watch my kids. I'm like, well, of course we will. So I'm going to say this in short form. There's obviously more details just for anyone like listening. But these wonderful kids come into our home, love them so much instantly. The mom doesn't come back. And it had been about a week and Child Protective Services comes over. I guess there was a history there of things. I said, what's going to happen to the children? And they said, well, the system is so rough.
Yeah, that could be a whole nother conversation that neither of us want to have.
But what they said was, they said, well, no one can take three kids at one time. So they'll get split up. And where will they go right now? Like, well, they'll go to our office. They'll sleep in our offices. And I'm like, I look at my wife and we said no words. We just looked and both knew and we both said, we'll take them. And they said, no, you can't do that. You're not foster certified. You can't get paid and all the things they say. And we said, well, what can we do? And they said, well, they got creative. It was actually a real positive thing. They said, since she put them in your care, it is considered
kinship.
So we'll call it a kinship placement. You still can't get paid. You do all these things like, this isn't about money, man. This is just children. You need help. You know, what are we going to do? So all of a sudden, we went from four kids to three kids. to 6 kids overnight. We love these kids. Natalie did so much with them, so much care. You know, you fall in love and they become your own. And without going into crazy details, after 2 years of uninterrupted custody, and we started the adoption process, with all this was going to happen, for reasons the state, you know, gave them back to the mom, which is wonderful, you know, for her, but also terrifying, because there were obviously reasons this whole situation happened. And it just tore us apart. I gotta be honest, it's I know you know this, but it is it's a different feeling having people that you love taken from you. Not necessarily taken from you, but someone you thought that was your family that now isn't there anymore, and to not know where they are, how they're doing. It is a very different pain than when her brother and our son passed away. Because to us, there's a finality, there's a faith that we'll see him again. But in this situation, it's like, are they okay? Every day we wake up with this anxiety, you know, years later even, are they okay? And grief comes in so many different forms, and it always comes in the most unexpected ways and at the most awkward times. We decided to huddle up our family. Just do the. We're gonna go on a road trip. That's what we told ourselves, and we were gonna fly to New York, one way tickets, and just drive across the country and see what happened. On the way to the airport, my wife starts stuttering, and I'm like, "What's going on?" And she can't remember our kids' names, and it's a whole thing. And we run to the hospital, and it ends up that she had a stroke. And she lost her memory for a time. She got it back. And I remember saying to Natalie, like, this is too much. Like, we're not going on a road trip. We thought this was a good idea. We thought, you know, we knew that going on a road trip wasn't running away from things. We knew that it would be more like absolute insanity. If you've ever been in a car with, you know, a kid for a long time, you know, it's actually absolutely insane, right?
Oh, we don't take road trips anymore because we hate them so much.
It all comes out in the car, man. But Natalie was actually going to go to New York before us for like a conference or something. And then we were going to follow up. And I'm like, no, we're just going to go home. This is too much. Let's just relax, you know. And she says, no, if I lay down, I'm not getting back up. So she gets on the airplane and I give her this note. And I'm like, if I forget my name.
I remember this.
If I forget my name, call this number, you know, my number. You know,
this is terrifying. Even thinking about it back, I'm like, this happened.
It's so bad.
But of course it did, because grief also manifests in so many ways. Mm. And there's just so many things going on at this time. And
yeah. She was gonna push terrible. Through this one. And so I'm like, well, she's going to forget to give him the note, you know? Whatever. So she gets there, a friend's there to meet her. Everything's fine. We meet her there. We get up on the road from New York to California to Mexico to Canada, back down and back to Hawaii over about 6 months. We just went really slow. And it was a wonderful experience. We learned how to make money from the road, on the road, you know, and totally changed the way we thought. We thought, if family is the most important, can we try to live and work, because, you know, we're entrepreneurs, in a way that puts, literally, in a very physical sense, family first, we are present, work second, it supports the family.
So was that the first time you worked in that way, was on that road trip?
It's a good question. I was already working from home and doing this thing and, you know, working from my cell phone. And this is at a time when cell phones, like, they didn't work like computers like they work now. Like, it was actually very
archaic.
Difficult and archaic. But it was the first time going on the road for a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah.
We'd gone on like several weeks or a month or two at a time. But we were always ending up somewhere where we could settle down for at least a while. This was, when I say this, what I mean is, like, at least every night or every other night we were staying somewhere else and we didn't know that's where we were gonna stay.
Yes.
So the business had to be virtual.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that
became a huge blessing for us. And let me just kind of connect the dots for a second. What I'm trying to say is, a lot of tragedies happened. They are still awful. And we'd ask ourselves, what do we value? And we chose to put those values first, and then we dreamed, and then we chose to live from those dreams. Even though someone who listens to this might not be able to dream right now, I totally understand. But we worked from those dreams, not toward them.
Mm. This is so good. How did you get over the fear of feeling like it was safe for you to dream again? Or did you not experience that and just Natalie did?
I mean, that's a really good question.
Because here's why I asked. Because at least for me, and I know a lot of the women that are listening because I hear from them, it's like grief does this thing and life does this thing where when something unexpected happens, you don't know if it's going to happen again or when, and it can just totally kick your sense of safety off the rails. I think it's one of the reasons people are having a really hard time right now post-pandemic, because that messed with how we were functioning and what we were expecting day to day. And I know that, you know, I always say no one likes talking about pandemic anymore, but you have these unexpected things that happen, ruins your sense of safety. You try to get it back, but part of that is feeling safe enough to dream new dreams again. So were you afraid at all, or were you excited for, not that it's a new chapter, but just something that brought you to life to focus on?
My gut tells me, I could be wrong about this. My gut tells me I personally didn't stop dreaming or thinking of the future. I started thinking of it differently.
Just differently.
For me, it wasn't necessarily about safety. For Natalie, though, I think it was.
Yeah.
Definitely. It was a different fear, a different... she's very empathic and understanding, you know, and if things... She has a dream like that. I mean, that's... It maybe hurts more than maybe it does for me. I don't think that's necessarily a difference between men and women, because I, in my consulting work, I talk to probably more women than men, honestly, about some of these dreams and business and things like that. But a lot of the men I talk to too, especially executives and CEOs, to be honest, they're terrified. They're terrified of the future because everything they've done so far has been such a great success, more or less.
Yeah.
That they're afraid that when they do something new, it's going to be a hard fall. And so it feels like it's kind of, and I obviously have had those same feelings too, so it's a little bit different. But what I want to try to say is this, is instead of thinking about how scared I am and what if this happens, what I've told myself is, because there's more tragedies to be told, by the way, but
I hate that so much.
What I've told myself is, logically, since I can't predict these terrible experiences that are likely, not unlikely, likely to happen, this sounds morbid, but I don't expect or plan like to die until I'm in my 140 or something. But at the same time, I am fully not surprised that if I die today or tomorrow, every day I think this could be my last day. So in that sense, I think if these terrible things are going to happen anyways, I might as well do the stuff that I want to do right now.
And you do. Yeah. You do the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like your whole life is set up, at least from me looking in a way that your values are very much seeing time with your family, your focus on you owning your time as your most valuable currency, and living this beautiful life that you guys have worked really hard and have chosen to
good word
to have
yeah
it be this way. Like, this didn't just fall into your lap, clearly. Yeah. From what we were talking about, you've yes. created this very intentional yes. life.
I think that, so like what do I do next, like that's yeah. kind of what we're talking about. And whether it's after grief or it's just after a career change, mm-hmm. which brings on tons of feelings.
Oh, and an by the identity way. Crisis. And
just getting older, like the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be death. It's all kinds of things that just make us feel like, you know, like whatever it is. I learned to say this instead. Instead of saying, what am I going to do? I say, like, once you decide who you want to be, then you'll know what to do.
Cha-ching! You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store, but did you know Shopify powers selling in person too? Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. You can connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. You can also get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/healinghher, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/healinghher to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/healinghher. Ooh. Once you decide who you want to be, then you'll know
what to do. It is the opposite of focusing on goals, habits, and strengths. People are bad at choosing the right ones.
Yes.
We're very bad at choosing the right goals, habits, and strengths.
Well, and a lot of times, though, because also you could choose some and make it happen and still feel like crap because you don't know who you are still.
If you choose who you want to be, the goals, habits, and strengths organize themselves around you naturally. You one day said, I'm going to be a podcaster. Therefore, you got the computer software and the mics and you started interviewing people. Or you could have gotten the computer, the mics, and never said you were going to be a podcaster, or any number of scenarios. But it's not until you say I am that you actually do it. Most people will say I will and then never do. This is true.
This is my entire clarity mapping process. So the fact that you are telling me what I have felt to my bones that more women need, I'm like, yeah, okay, Richie, do you want to come be in charge of the Healing Her membership now with
us? I'll tell you just a quick tangent, then we can come back into some of my story stuff. But I was giving a TEDx talk in Moldova, and I met this Grammy Award winning rapper named Syra. And I said, how'd you become a rapper? And she said, you know, and she explained to me her whole story, how she grew up in New York, how her dad died of a drug overdose, how somehow she made her way over to California and she was homeless and she was in gangs and she was, I hate even saying the word, but she was raped and she had all these, the worst things you can imagine that happened to a human happened to her at a young, very young age. And then she said, because my question was, how'd you become a rapper? And then she says, but then a voice came in my head that said, you need to be a rapper. So she said, I am a rapper. I'm not joking, okay? So she ended up doing was going somewhere in LA where you can get on a stage and you rap and everybody like boos you off the stage if you suck. And she would go, I think every Thursday, and she
like
would
Eminem get- Eminem in real life.
Yeah, she would get booed every single time off the stage until a point they said, someone said to her, like, yeah, what are you doing? And these are her words, not mine. She says something like, and they took me aside. They taught me how to be a girl. They taught me how to like do my nails. They taught me how to rap. She told me this.
Wow.
And I'm like, this is an amazing story. And eventually one thing led to another and she won a Grammy. Okay. I tell you this story because this is the lesson that I learned is, she never had the chance to take lessons, music lessons, ballet lessons, tap lessons, dance lessons, jazzercise. I don't know if that's a thing. That would be awesome, but she didn't do it. You know what I mean?
I don't know if Grammy winners need jazzercise, but I would love it for them if she does.
They need to bring it back. So anyways, she didn't have any of that stuff. But you know what she had? She had I am. It was the moment she said that I am this thing that everything changed for her. And that is what it's like for everybody. Like if you say I am grief, what do you expect? You're going to have it either way. And yes, there is hope. There is light in the tunnel. It does change and feel different. It does get better. But the I am thing makes one more thing that makes it very, like, if you say, I want to write a book, you never write a book. If you say, I'm an author, if you say, I have a book project, you start writing. So I say this just so that people are, I'm trying to make it super practical, right? Yes. If someone's thinking, woe is me, and it's like, I agree, don't punish yourself. When you're ready, tell yourself who you really are. And sometimes it takes someone like you to whisper it in their ear. Because sometimes we can't see outside.
So I think sometimes our grief can shrink our world and make it also feel really isolating. I think for me, I don't know if you guys experienced this, but during some of the hardest moments of our grieving process, seeing the rest of the world spin when yours feel like it has stopped, that felt so isolating and made my world feel so small.
This horrible thing's happening. Yeah. People are still going shopping.
And they're still going. You know, and they're still like, buying things. What do you mean you're out for drinks and dinner and whatever? But I say that because it can be really hard when you're just in it, just trying to survive.
Yeah.
To even fathom that there will be a moment where you're not just trying to survive, where you can feel joy, or where you're going to want to go see your friends, or where you're going to laugh and experience the world again. Like, that can feel like that is light years away. So I love that you're pointing this out, that it's okay if you don't see that yet, which is why it's so important to surround yourself with people who can.
Yes. No, it's so true. I love it. So when we got back to Hawaii, we're living here on the North Shore. I actually do a lot of work overseas. I work with I do social entrepreneurship, help people work their way out of poverty in other countries. I also do kind of bigger business stuff in Asia with big company, whatever. I do all kinds of,
Richie's being very modest right now. Richie has a really amazing company. They create products for all types of businesses. Yeah. He's built something incredible there too.
So I was on the mainland. I was going to give a speech around the Power of Starting Something Stupid book, and then I was flying to China, and I get these texts, I get this call in the middle of the night, and I finally pick it up, and they say, Richie, Lincoln, my son at the time, who I think was I think he was 11 or 12, he got hit by a car. And I'm like, what? And turns out a distracted driver didn't see him at all. So that means he didn't slow down, just ran him over, and he got thrown into a ditch. And the guy did stop and come back, but he should be, at the time, like, he should be dead. He should be, who knows, quadriplegic, you know, who knows, all kinds of, it should have been really bad. It was really bad. There was someone that knew us that saw him on the street. And, she said, I didn't know it was him. He was unrecognizable because of the way his face looked. I know, bad. Obviously canceled the speech, canceled the trip to China, flew back to Hawaii immediately. He was in the hospital for a long time. He was in a coma. He comes out of a coma. He sees his mom, says he loves her. And the next thing that comes out of his mouth is, are we still going shark diving? It was his birthday. You know? He was going to go shark diving for his birthday. And I just thought, wow, this is crazy. You know, and he's fine now. He rides these big, giant 20, 25, 30-foot waves. Like, he's a wild and crazy kid. And what was interesting is I thought, well, one thing about him, I thought, this is insane. I thought he would be afraid of life for the rest of his life. Because something terrible happened to him.
Because he very well could
but
be.
It was the opposite for him. Huh. He didn't think, he doesn't say this out loud necessarily, but the way he acts, it wasn't that he got hit by a car. It was that he beat the car.
That's so cool.
He wasn't just a survivor. He was Superman. A lot of it comes down to how we think. But I remember walking around thinking, okay, so my brother-in-law passed away, my son passed away, my wife has a stroke, loses her memory. You know, our foster kids leave. My son's hit by a car, and I thought, does God hate me? And then I thought, you know what? These things aren't necessarily strung together. They're not necessarily happening to me, even though I've had terrible things that we aren't talking about happen to. But they just happened. And I just told myself, love God unconditionally and go to work. Like, just focus on what you can do. Stop blaming daddy in the sky. Stop blaming other people. Stop blaming anyone. The moment you start blaming, there's a place for blame, I understand. But the moment you do, you kind of lose a little bit of your own power to overcome it. Even though you're not taking necessarily responsibility for things that happen, how can you be responsible for your own life unless you kind of tell yourself, I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm not even going to blame God. It's for me, it's a scary thought. People don't think about that. But for me, it was a powerful thought. And it allowed me to like show up the way I'm showing up. I'm not perfect. I'm not, everything's not great. But it allowed me to say, I am going to do the best I can with what I have regardless right now.
Would you say that now, because this was a question that I actually wanted to ask you, now that you are in this specific season of your life, what is kind of your theme to your life? Would it, would that be it? Or is there what is your thought that you kind of hold on to keep building this dream and keep moving forward?
I tell myself a couple of things. My latest thought is, you can't sacrifice what you love for success. Because when you sacrifice what you love for success, you get neither.
How do you come up with this stuff?
I'm a poet.
You are a poet. you just go walk on the beach with your dog, just writing poetry in your head all day. I'm like, this guy needs to be famous poet.
Yes, introduce me as the famous poet. No, I'm just joking.
We need to redo your intro. The famous poet, Richie Norton.
That would be amazing. No, I wasn't a punk rock band growing up. That was like a songwriter guy. You know,
that's legit.
But I don't know. But it, like, attached to that thought is that how you spend your time is how you show your love. So when I wrote Anti-Time Management, and I've spoken a lot around it, people ask me questions. One time someone said, well, after a whole hour of speaking on it, someone said, what'd you really learn? And I'm like, why do you ask such a stupid question? Like, I just talked for a freaking hour, you know? And I said that. I said, like, how you spend your time is how you show your love. And it is the worst feeling when you're in a room of executives who have spent zero time, not just quality time, not quantity time, next to zero time with the ones they love, the ones they said they were working for. And then I go, you know, no one's working for work's sake, man. Like, what are we working for? It doesn't mean you can't have abundance. It doesn't mean you can't be a major success in business. That is not what we're saying. And it doesn't even matter what it is we're talking about as far as your goals are. What I mean is, if you say that the reason you're starting, let's just say, for example, a business is to have more time with your family, but the business takes away time from your family, you are fundamentally doing it wrong. In fact, you're doing it just the way you learn by being a manager at any store. Why would you do it that way? Be the architect. Architects don't build buildings, they draw them. Be the general contractor. They don't pick up a hammer if they don't want to. This applies to everything we do in life. What I'm trying to say is, if you already know the goal is, it can be any goal, but let's just continue with the idea of abundance of time. If you're saying the goal is abundance of time, this is crazy. When you say, I will have more time, you actually do all the stuff that you have to do in shorter periods of time. No one is more productive than a procrastinator with an impending deadline. It's called a forcing function. So like, you create this new world, like you change your environment by literally just living the way you want, and then allow the work to still be. What's crazy is you are actually more productive and you can do more when you put your actual dreams first, because you can't procrastinate them. They are forced to happen.
I want to apply this to motherhood.
Okay, tell me. Yeah.
No, everything you're saying is so true and like palpable. I'm like, yes, keep going. Yes, keep going. And I know there's a lot of women, female entrepreneurs who are listening, women in business, and a lot of them are mothers, and also a lot of stay-at-home mothers listening. But a couple of things that you just said, because I think that moms, we feel like there is no time for us. But two things that just stuck out. You were talking about being your own architect of your dream. And I think in motherhood specifically, and especially because it creates so many changes in your life that you don't have a ton of control over, but knowing that you are allowed to do things differently than you've been told you should be doing them.
That's
just
a good
like
point.
You've been talking about in entrepreneurship. But I think sometimes we can get so caught up in the roles of what we think we should be that then we lose everything else. But it goes to what you just said. Then it's like, then you're losing both of those, the success and the joy of it. But then you also just said the abundance of time comes from when you can focus on putting your dreams first.
Yes.
And so many moms have put everyone else's dreams in front of theirs for so long that they feel like they have ran out of time for what brings them to life.
Yes, yes, yes.
And this doesn't mean because motherhood is messy and just crazy, and especially if the ages of your kids, like it's not easy, right? But
it's not easy.
What you're saying, I was also listening to it in from the lens of motherhood. I'm like, this is so applicable to that.
That is applicable. Well, I wasn't thinking of it when I was saying it from the lens of motherhood, and motherhood
right, 'cause you're talking
is
about
very,
entrepreneurship,
very
but
difficult, and everyone's situation is different.
So different.
So it's hard. That's why podcasts are cool, because they can get personal, but also it's hard because they're still obviously general, you know.
Right.
Depending on those. But I will say this, whatever your situation is, especially if mother with young children and you want to spend all your time with them, but you still have these dreams. So I'm not gonna tell you exactly what to do, because it changes. Mm-hmm. It actually changes their seasons. Like when your kids are younger or older, like is it the timeline, like change your time horizon. There's a lot of things we can talk about. But I'll give one clue that helps me and has helped like many mothers, honestly, that I have talked to, but whatever. You can tell me if it helps, okay? The idea is when you're thinking through a problem, don't think that it's if I do this, then this bad thing will happen. Or if I do this, then this good thing will happen. Because what normally happens is we have this either or thinking, where if I do this thing as a mother, then I can't do this thing in my career, and vice versa. If I do this thing in my career, then I can't be a mother. These are two thoughts, and let's be honest, maybe one or the other is the best decision at the time, but there is a different way of thinking, and I call it algebraic thinking. It is, how can I do this thing without sacrificing this other thing in this amount of time? It doesn't mean the answer will come immediately, but it does mean you finally created space in your mind, and also allows you to start creating space in reality for an opportunity to come that may just fall in your lap, or you're thinking about it while you're running around and doing what you know, running, doing whatever you do, right? You have to create a space in your mind for a new thought. The new thought doesn't have to come immediately. You just have to say, how can I do this thing without that bad thing I'm worried about? Most people stop there. That is not good thinking. How can I do this thing without that bad thing happening within this amount of time? And we are more creative than we know. What happens, you start focusing on the whole Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. You start saying, oh, I could get all of this stuff by just leveraging these tiny little things, and I could outsource all of these things, and oh, it costs so much money, but what if I did it this way? And all of a sudden you figured it out.
There's solutions to it.
There's a way.
Which goes back to the whole topic of what we've been talking about of how do I know what I'm doing next? I hope, and I know from this conversation, I've loved this conversation. You
Same,
are
thank you.
Freaking awesome. Thank you so much for having
amazing.
This with me.
Thank you.
But going back into that conversation of there's a solution.
Yes.
No matter how hard it is right now, there is a solution, not for you to magically feel better, but there is a path forward. And everything that you've shared today has given such actionable, tangible, small step process to help people start moving forward.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you
Thank you.
Richie, you're the best. Where can everyone find you? We're going to high five. We just high fived. You couldn't see it, but we did high five so awkwardly just now. Wow.
Oh my God.
Where can everyone come and find you?
Just go to richienorton.com, and at richienorton.com/time, I have a whole like free plan for you that you can customize to yourself over 90 days to get your time and your freedom and your ideas down in a way that they can actually happen sooner than later.
Does that coincide with your book too?
Yeah, Anti-Time Management.
Okay,
yeah.
So we'll link both of those below so you guys know exactly where to go and find Richie.
Yes.
Richie,
yes.
You're the best.
No, you're the best. That was amazing. Thank you so much. That was really fun. Thank love you, you so, so much. Fun. Appreciate it.
We love you guys. And to everyone, thank you so much for joining us again on this week's episode of the Healing Her podcast, and until I see you again next week, take good care of yourself. I'm so honored you joined us for this episode of the Healing Her podcast, where healing isn't just a destination, it's an empowering, transformative adventure. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss brand new episodes each Tuesday. And if you're ready for more tangible tools, make sure you grab my best-selling book, I Am Here, wherever books are sold, or in the link in the show notes below. Take good care of yourself until I see you again next week.